You're listening to Clack Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. And now, Side B.
Welcome, everybody, to Side B of this week's Clack Radio Speakers. Side A you can find on clackradiospeakers.com, 4thdistrict.com, or just search for us in your favorite podcast app. We talked, oddly, about drinking water. We also talked about XXL Freshman 2016 list. And what the kids are listening to, because we're old people. We talked about the Cruel Winter single, Champions, the CDQ's out, and why I hated the changes they made. And we talked about Kanye's going on tour. And yeah, how you doing, man? You good?
I'm good, man. William A. Holler, we in the building. What's up?
That was Armand. I am Doc. Follow the show on Twitter, at CRS Podcast. Let's talk real quick about WWDC.
I always feel like you're gonna say WWE whenever you say it. Like, are we gonna talk wrestling on the show? Bet.
Armand's like cracking the knuckles, rolling the sleeves up.
Here we go.
WWDC is the Worldwide Developer Conference. It's Apple's yearly developer conference, which has kind of turned into like they basically make a bunch of announcements about stuff. Some years it's software, some years it's hardware, some years it's both. This year it was mostly software. Did you catch any of the news coming out from it?
I saw some of it. I didn't really see a whole lot.
So basically, I know you don't have an Apple Watch. My wife has an Apple Watch, so I was really paying attention to that. They touched every part of it. Dramatic overdue, even though the watch isn't even that old. The new OS, which will be... So all the stuff they announced, there's betas now, but it'll all come out in September. So just much faster, whole bunch of new features. You just do a whole bunch. I mean, I don't even know what else to say. Like, it just looks like it should have been how it should have worked from day one. They reimagine how some of the buttons like sort of get you in and out of different parts of the operating system. Like, it's a huge upgrade. And it's kind of unusual because it really just came out last spring. So already this deep into really, you know, they're really putting a lot of work in. My wife loves her Apple Watch. So for me, I was like, yeah, Apple Watch. Are you entertaining like an Android Wear watch or any smartwatch or anything like that? Even like a Fitbit or anything or nothing?
Nah,
like that?
I'm not a watch guy. Mm. I'm good. I play with the Apple Watch just to see it, and I've seen one of my mentors has a Fitbit, and he showed me the whole thing, and I'm just like, that's cool. It's cool, but it's just I don't really need it. Not right now.
Yeah. They're starting to do like really slick stuff. Like if you're all bought into the Apple ecosystem, they're starting to try to do stuff so that it's like, oh, right, that just kind of works the way it should. Like if you have your Apple Watch on and you open up wake your Mac computer up or like open the lid on your MacBook, it'll just auto log you in because it knows you're there because the watch is attached to you and it knows that you are you. Like little things like that. And you're like, oh. Like, how many times a day do I go back to my computer and, like, type my password? All the time. So, little stuff like that. Let's see. Mac OS, you know, this audience doesn't really care about. They added Siri, so I'll finally be able to talk to my computer. But iOS, man, let me tell you, they really went all in on messages. Like, what they're doing to iMessage.
That was the biggest thing that I saw. That was the one thing that really caught my attention.
Like, it's funny because I feel like we're getting to a point now where like there's a real divide. It's funny. Like, I don't want to say that technology is becoming accessible, but like it's clear that like usage of smartphones and even like, you know, clearly smartwatches and stuff like that. We're out of the era of this is for nerds. Like, we've been out of there. But like what's interesting is companies are now designing things that aren't just for geeks. You know what I mean? Like the stuff they added to messages, like the audience of like people who professionally write and podcast about Apple products, they're looking at this stuff like, why do I want to be able to like, you know, take pictures in this weird way? I mean, they want to take pictures, but you know what I mean? Like they went for not quite a full Snapchat experience, but it's clear that they're feeling pressure from these other messaging apps. And that's what, especially younger generation, that's what people are using.
Yep.
And so to watch Apple go all in on that is really interesting. I mean, there's like small stuff that I use emoji all the time. So like anything that improves how emoji works is great.
Yeah. Agreed. Same.
Developers will finally be able to like let Siri use stuff with apps. So that's nice. Stuff they should have done a long time ago. They totally redesigned Apple Music only 1 year in. Looks like they're hopefully eliminating some of people's pain points. I like Apple Music. I never thought Spotify was particularly well designed.
But
I know people love it. So
do they? Because I was getting ready to say, I think Apple Music and Tidal have done a great job this year of collectively getting Spotify out of here.
Well, I think Apple's done that because they're the 100-pound gorilla who can just come in and be like, we're gonna pay for exclusives and everybody gets a 3 month trial on on one of the most popular, one of the two most popular phone platforms. Like, they can just put it there. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, they have that way to do it, but I forget what their numbers were, but basically they're by far the fastest growing streaming service. It'd be interesting to see if they keep up with exclusives. They had a big thing with Drake, obviously. Long-standing rumors that Dre has an actual album, not Compton, but like, no joke, the Detox album that he's been slowly working, that actually might come out for Apple Music. Be interesting to see what other exclusives that they have lined up, because Tidal is the other one. Tidal's exclusives, I mean, they had a big first half of the year.
Listen, I meant to say this on side A, but part of Kanye's pre-sale, today was for American Express cardholders, Thursday is for Tidal members. Mm. I think that's dope.
Yeah. Tidal's, I just want to hate Tidal so much, but they're trying to win me over.
They're trying.
Trying so hard.
So I've kind of been alternating back and forth. So I've been using Tidal for the last 2 months since Prince passed, and I forgot to cancel it, and they charged me. So I'm like, well, got this for 30 days. I know what I'm using.
Right.
I don't hate it.
Right.
I don't hate Tidal at all. I like it. I think that their now playing interface is terrible with the little spinning album cover. I think that's terrible. But I do like the fact that they, and Spotify integrated this recently as well, is they immediately underneath the song playing have suggested songs based off of algorithms or whatever that you can immediately go to. I like that.
Yeah. One of the strengths theoretically of Apple Music is what they started with Beats, which are like all their curated playlists. But I feel like I feel like they did the way that they did the design didn't really encourage people to do that, because because to make that work, you have to really tell, like, you have to go in and set, like, these are the artists I like.
Yeah.
And then you actually, when they come up with a suggestion, like, I don't think people do this. I do this. You have to tell it, no, I don't like that suggestion.
I don't think people do that. And I think for me, being a playlist nerd, I was just like, oh, I can do that playlist better. Now, here's the difference between Tidal's playlists and Apple Music's playlists. Apple Music's playlists are only 12 songs, 13
right,
songs.
Right.
Tidal playlists are like mine. They're 60, 70 records.
See, I don't make playlists like that.
And I totally make playlists like that.
I make playlists like I'm making an album.
Yeah.
So that's why Apple Music kind of works for my brain. But
right.
They added stuff they should have added before, like, lyric support, tweaked the design, made it easier to, because part of the problem is, like, they're trying to drag the biggest digital media platform, which is iTunes, like paid downloads, they're trying to drag that into the future at the same time as they're trying to do streaming. And there's not always 100% of an overlap. Like, there are some people who are like, I want to buy my music.
Yep.
And so they don't like that Apple Music was being shoved down their throat, even though Apple can see the future. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it's like, it's why Netflix came from Netflix and not from your cable company.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Because even if they could see the future, it's hard to do it when you're the cable company. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I don't know. I'm optimistic about Apple Music. I still like it. They just added a bunch of other, like, small tweaks. I don't know. Like, I'm looking forward to new hardware coming in the fall. Apple has basically they're trying to work around the carrier, so to speak. So you can just go to the Apple store, pay them a small monthly fee, and you just get a new phone. You get the new phone every year. So it's kind of, like some carriers have it where, like, if you're on a certain plan, you can let me try this phone, and you can do it so many times or whatever. Obviously Apple comes out with a new phone every year. So you can just get on their payment thing or whatever, and it includes AppleCare. So if anything ever happens, like, you just bring it and all this other stuff. But, like, it's basically, no, when the new phone comes out, I'm just going to go to the Apple store and get my new phone. And you're just constantly paying.
Wow.
And the math works out so that it's pretty much the same as if you either bought it outright and then tried to sell it, or if you did the, okay, well, let me, you know, pay only $200, but then I'm paying my cell phone company this, and the math is fine. Like if you're somebody who has been trying to do like the, let me have a regular cell phone plan, but you know, sometimes I got to buy it outright and then I got to sell my old one because it's not my turn on contract. If you've ever done that, if you're on one of those plans, and if you are an iPhone user, you should probably look into this in the fall. Mm. So that's it, man. WWC, a lot of software stuff.
Shout out to Vince McMahon, Shane, Stephanie. Shout out to WWE.
Not quite. But speaking of WWE, speaking of how everything is like wrestling, let's talk about the NBA Finals.
Let's do it.
Your man, Draymond Green.
Yes. A.K.A. Dragmine Green.
Dragmine Green. Great tweet last night. That was hilarious.
Were you surprised that he got suspended?
No.
Do you think he should have got suspended?
Yes.
I agree with you. Are you surprised that people thought that there was a conspiracy?
No.
Because it's so predictable.
Yes.
So you're in Ohio. Do you have any insight, or maybe you have the opposite of insight because you're in Ohio, but I'm trying to understand why people hate LeBron James so much. I'm trying to get that.
I don't know why. I'm not sure why.
And if you're gonna hate him, really, you're going in on Draymond Green, one of the least likable players,
right,
in the NBA.
I can't stand Draymond Green.
I don't understand it.
You can also keep in mind that last year, everybody loved Dellavedova.
Mm.
He had that run. He had that.
He had the 20-point game.
No, what's the kid's name? He had a Rudy run.
Rudy run.
He had a Rudy run, and everybody loves Rudy.
Right.
And now, okay, we'll get into that later. But I seriously don't know why people hate, not only hate LeBron, but just hate them the way that they do. Like, it's an unbearable hate.
I have some theories. Namely, our generation was taught by Jordan that there is one way to be a great player.
Mm.
You have to be a maniac.
Yeah.
Possibly unhinged.
Yeah. Yeah.
Completely crazy.
Yeah.
And if you're not, if you play a different way, if you don't have this, like, I must kill you.
Yeah, I was going to say, they call it the killer instinct, right? Right.
If you don't have that, then you're wrong.
Yeah.
And you're soft. There's that soft word. And it's emblematic of how this generation's not the same. Like, look, I grew up idolizing Michael Jordan.
We all did. Yep.
When you look at the legacy of what has followed, it's kind of like, you remember how, we've talked about in the show, when Jay was in his prime, part of the problem wasn't Jay. It was what he did to the mindset of New York rappers. And they all had to do stuff just like Jay, but they're not Jay, so it wasn't as good. And it sort of warped New York's understanding of what a rapper is supposed to be. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's a whole generation that were basically just trying to be, like, this is the Jay-Zita. This is what,
yep,
it means. This is what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan did the same thing, personified by Kobe Bryant, who, if he weren't a basketball player, would be called a stalker and a maniac. But he's one of the top 10 most talented basketball players of all time, most successful basketball players of all time. So we allow it. Look, LeBron hasn't always come through. He's not a perfect person because he's a human being. Jordan wasn't perfect either.
Exactly.
What LeBron did in Game 5 was unbelievable.
Fantastic. The amazing part about it is that wasn't his best performance, but I don't even want to judge it against LeBron's best performances.
He's old. He's old now. He's got a lot of miles on him. I just don't think he can do it. Like, I think he kind of ran out of gas in the fourth quarter. Like, he just can't do that for four quarters, I don't think. But three might be enough.
Three might be enough, especially if you've got somebody else, you know, carrying that weight with you, as Kyrie was doing last night.
I'm an unabashed Kyrie hater.
You are.
I have reasons.
And dare I say that if it wasn't for Klay hitting all those threes in the first half, yeah, and a little bit of the third quarter, the narrative would have been that Kyrie was killing him.
Right. Number one, Kyrie. So first of all, let me say this. Kyrie had an incredible offensive game.
Yes, he did.
Incredibly efficient. Now, he made some terrible defensive mistakes.
Yeah.
But that's the Kyrie experience. So, like, if the Kyrie experience is there's going to be defensive lapses, but he's capable of doing this on offense, then you go for it. To me, the problem is there hasn't been enough evidence that Kyrie can be this efficient on offense. And so you start looking at these, like, Allen Iverson. Sorry, Wes. Allen Iverson style stat lines from him. Russ Westbrook style stat lines, where you're looking at these numbers and you're like, how are you taking this many shots and only making this many? Like, I'm like almost offended by Kyrie's game sometimes. He is a point guard, theoretically. But my God, nobody can pound a basketball and then try to make everybody go ooh and ah to save himself because he decided to go ISO. Meanwhile, the whole team's just like, you can see it. Like, when they call a Kyrie play, they all just stand around and Kyrie's going to make someone skate and there's going to be a Vine and people are going to retweet it and they get excited. So congratulations. Terrible, terrible basketball that was rescued because he's an incredible talent. I don't want to watch that. I don't. I have no desire to watch that. That's why I don't like watching Kyrie.
He's far and away the best finisher in the league.
Westbrook might be better.
No.
You don't think so? When you say finisher, What do you mean? You mean the rim?
At the rim.
Nah.
Yeah, not better. Or he's definitely better than Westbrook. Now, I challenged that maybe about a month ago, and then I watched the Golden State series. So what Kyrie does that Westbrook that Kyrie doesn't do is sometimes he has that play where he drives and like he just throws the ball over the entire
basket.
That's
true. That's true. Like he's almost like he is permanently stuck on turbo.
Yes. And even when Kyrie is going fast, there's still some control where he doesn't look like out of control.
You're right.
It doesn't look like Clark Griswold sliding down the sled. That's what Westbrook looks like driving down the lane sometimes. So, but Westbrook is easily number two.
Yeah.
But you just don't like Westbrook. It's fine. Or you just don't like Kyrie.
I think Westbrook's overrated too. I think you should have to play defense. I do. I really do.
I agree.
It's half the game. Like, literally, it's half the game. I know we didn't grow up that way. Like, people can wax poetic about, like, the game in the 80s especially. Listen, watch some of those games. Dudes were not playing defense. Nope. There was no defense happening half the time until they cared at the end. Those huge portions of the games were, like, just score. I mean, part of the reason, like, look, some of the, like, in the mid-80s, some of those scores were crazy high. You think they were really playing defense? Come on now. So, I know that we all grew up lionizing offense, but like we know more now. We know how much defense matters. So like, I don't understand why we pretend it doesn't. But anyway, I thought LeBron was great. I thought Kyrie was great on offense. I have nothing bad to say about him on offense. He was amazing. What happened to your man, Kevin Love?
I just think he has the Chris Bosh thing going on where he's so used to playing in one role that he's just having a very hard time.
Oh, don't do that. Don't drag Bosh's name down there.
Wait. Because that's not slander. Because I'm not the guy who thinks Kevin Love is just like, I'm not the guy telling the Kevin Love jokes. All of my Cleveland slander is reserved for Mo Williams. But he just reminds me of Bosh before Bosh finally figured out his role, where he's just like, all right, what do I, because normally in this situation, I get the ball and I do this. But now the situation comes up and LeBron has the ball or Kyrie has the ball. And I'm just like, all right, what do I do? I'm doing something. That's what he looks like.
Hmm.
He looks lost out there, and as a result, I think that mentally it's taking a toll on his confidence in his game, and he just doesn't know how to adjust yet. And I don't know if they're going to give him the time to do so.
Yeah, he's not right for this team. Yeah. And whatever has happened to his confidence is terrible.
And that sucks.
It does. I don't know. It's weird because it's clear that they need to get rid of him because if he were another player not named Kevin Love who played the way that he'd been playing, they wouldn't even think about starting him. Not even a chance. I think it's a chance for some team to get him and maybe rehabilitate him in a weird way. Like go someplace where they're not going to like, I mean, I kind of think LeBron has just done mental damage to him, you know?
Yeah. The Vine last night, we went to go give LeBron a high five and LeBron yelled at him.
Nah, the longer Vine shows she was basically trying to show LeBron, no, I was doing this basketball move, and LeBron's like, no, you should have been doing this. Oh. And I'm sure Kevin Love is looking at this going, I could be the number one option on a team and I'm sitting here getting lectured by LeBron James.
I could be the number one option in LA.
I think Boston is the right move. The
mean streets of Boston.
They got too many people. They've got exactly what Cleveland wants. Regardless, like honestly, let's say they came back and won. which we should talk about what we think will happen. But let's say they came back and won. I still think they should trade Kevin Love.
Yeah, they could.
Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, plus whatever they got else to make everybody happy for Kevin Love. Makes everybody happy.
Yeah.
Avery Bradley means you don't means you can get rid of you could probably get rid of Shump, or at the very least you can get rid of Deli. So Deli's not playing crucial minutes. Jay Crowder can, you know, he can basically play a better, you know, he can sort of play like the Richard Jefferson role in a weird way. Like he can play 3 and 4 and him and LeBron can go back and forth. He'll shoot the three, play defense. He's not a star name, so they don't have to worry about it. You know, it's hard enough when you have to worry about, like, because clearly Kyrie still thinks, like, he should have half the team. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's hard enough if you've got LeBron and Kyrie battling for who should be in charge. You can't have a third star in there who also thinks that they should be getting theirs. So, I don't know. So, let me ask you this. Game 6 is...
Thursday? Yeah.
Game 6 is Thursday. It's Tuesday night. We record this. Draymond, we'll be back.
Yeah.
We
didn't talk about Bogut. Yeah, no Bogut.
No word on Bogut. I think
he's done.
That knee injury. He grabbed it immediately.
I mean, you saw like the way his knee bent. Like,
yeah, it is no good.
Yeah, he's done.
So probably no Bogut. What do you think happens?
I really want LeBron to get a ring.
Mm.
I really do. I want him to. Part of me only wants him to get a ring for him. I don't want Ohio to get a ring because Ohio just doesn't do sports well. Oof. Like, we just don't. Like, we just do not do sports well.
Okay.
Ohio, the greatest thing to come out of Ohio sports is probably that mid-90s Indians team with Jim Tomey and Kitty Lofton.
You're going to ignore Ohio State?
Who?
Oh, no. We're not going to be able to walk into the Schottenstein Center.
Oh, I walk in. Yo, nah. I don't do the best thing to come out of Ohio State are the women. Other than that, I'm good. I'll take that back.
We need to get you a Michigan Charles Woodson jersey. You can just stroll right in.
Yeah, but people from Michigan do that, and the Michigan fans in Ohio aren't any better.
Mm.
Like they're like, look at me. Like they wear those. Like Ohio State will play like Northwestern, and then you see a guy with the Michigan jersey on. Like, yo, like, just don't feed the trolls. Like go somewhere.
So, I would do that. Like if Syracuse was playing somebody, I would just show up in my UConn gear. Cause
no, but I'm not talking about showing up to like the arena. Like you're showing up to like
life
Kroger to do groceries. Yeah, you're doing groceries. Side note: if you live in Ohio, the best time to do the best time to run errands is whenever the game's on.
Mm.
The best time, because Ohio is lit, especially Columbus is dead while the game's on.
Sure. Yeah.
So
yeah.
If you want to run around, you gotta go to the mall. You know, I would go to the gym. Dead. It's perfect. It's beautiful.
Another good time if you're not someone, you know, if you don't go to church time, man, especially if you're like in a more rural area.
And if you do go to church, if your church starts late, if you have a noon service, go
10 o'clock.
Run your errands at like 9, 10 o'clock. Like, pfft, beautiful.
We need a whole side podcast. We just give life tips.
We've been meaning to do a life episode for a while, and we just kind of need
talking
to
talk about water, when to go food shopping.
Yep, life hacks.
Life hacks.
We really need to do that. I can't bet against Golden State. If Cleveland is smart, they'll play big, and they'll just pound Golden State in the pavement, and they'll just expose the fact that there's no Bogut. But nah, I don't see them making that adjustment. They're gonna try and shoot with Golden State like they've been doing, and they're not going to make shots like they did last night for two more games. It's not gonna happen.
I really just want. I mean, if Cleveland won, the most I would really just want LeBron to hit Comic Sans Dan with a steel chair. That's the only thing I want.
See, this is why I think that this is why I think Golden State's gonna win. Because what happened is it's gonna go to Game 7. And if you watch WrestleMania 17, you know this. It was Stone Cold against The Rock, no disqualification. WrestleMania 17 is considered by many to be the greatest WrestleMania of all time. Vince McMahon comes out to the ring. Stone Cold hits Rock with a stunner, like a third stunner. Rock kicks out. Austin is like, what do I have to do to beat The Rock and get my title back? Vince McMahon comes out, gives Stone Cold a chair. Now, this is right in the middle of Stone Cold, Vince McMahon. They have the most intense heated rivalry in one of the most in wrestling history. Hands him a chair. Stone Cold beats The Rock half to death with it. Finally pins him. and Stone Cold turns into a bad guy. He turns heel. I totally see that with Adam Silver being Vince McMahon and Steph Curry being Stone Cold Steve Austin. It's totally going to happen. And Steph's going to grab the chair. He's going to look around. He's going to look at Aisha. He's going to do that little the thing that they do before the games. He's going to beat LeBron mercilessly with the chair and turn heel and win game 7. And then the NWO music plays. Clay's going to come out and drop Kyrie.
Right. So if the Warriors the NWO, who's Draymond?
Oh, he's
Kevin Nash?
He's like Stevie Ray. He's Buff Bagwell.
Oh no.
He's Vincent.
Oh,
he's
come
like
on.
One down the line when they were drafting like Michael Wall Street and when the Big Boss Man joined and
oh man. Yeah, nah, disrespect for Draymond Green.
He's the Zodiac, he's the Booty Man. He's every bad NWO member rolled into one.
You think we could get Clay to turn his goatee black?
Like Hogan did?
Yeah.
I think Clay's got a really good heel promo in him. I think he grabs the mic during the trophy and he just like cuts.
I don't think so.
Steph tells these fans to stick it. They start throwing stuff on the court. And it's terrible. Who's Eric Bischoff? That's Steve Kerr, right? It's got to be Steve Kerr.
Yeah.
That's funny. Totally. And you see LeBron and somebody's going to be carrying somebody like that the league loves is going to run out and help LeBron off the court. Who's like a media darling of the NBA?
I mean, obviously, Steph? Wouldn't it be Dwayne Wade who comes in?
You have to be Dwayne Wade. Great storytelling. Have to be Dwayne and Chris Bosh. Because then it's like, oh, well, you know what? The big three, even though they were really cocky, they weren't that bad. They weren't like this. That's how you change the narrative.
I think it's really funny because it's just one game, but historically when we look back on this, there's a big difference between losing in 5 and losing in 6.
Absolutely.
Even if they go out in flame, oh well, actually that's interesting. How game 6 goes down will impact the narrative, obviously. But if they lose, they took the Warriors to 6.
Yep.
If it goes down in flames though, at home, that might be a problem.
I don't think they go down in flames at home.
You don't think so?
Nah. If they do, they lose and they make a couple bonehead plays. It's similar to game 4. If you think about it, they should have won game four.
Yeah.
This narrative is completely different if they don't like fumble the second half of the fourth quarter like they did game 4.
Heck, I knew at the start of the fourth quarter, I knew they were in trouble. I'll tell you why. Because they had they had Kevin Love, they had Tristan Thompson, and LeBron James out there at the same time. That means that they're playing big.
Yeah.
Which means you've got and Kyrie. So on defense, they've got Kyrie out there on the perimeter. They've got Kevin Love that they're worrying about on defense. And I was immediately like, nope, it's not happening. You cannot, like when the game, I mean, this is what stinks. Unless you're going small and if they don't have like all their starters in. Like if they have people on the bench in, you can handle Love at the 5 and Kyrie out there as well. But you can't go big and have Love and Kyrie out there at the same time. You just can't. The defense is terrible. They kept it in there for a while. Ty Lue refused to adjust, and they went on a run, and that was it. But they were in that game.
And you also cannot switch off of Clay.
It took a while. They finally got better about it. I think, actually, ironically, Richard Jefferson, of all people, is doing a good job.
He was. He was.
It's like, no, I don't think you understand. You cannot go under the screen.
Cannot.
I don't care what you have to do. You can't go under the screen. You can't leave Clay alone. And now like one of them, like I felt bad for Tristan Thompson because they were like 27 feet out and Tristan was only like 2 feet off him. Like it wasn't like he was, you know what I mean? You don't think he's just going to pull up from 27, but he's Clay Thompson. So he will. Like but some of them, it's like you see Clay, like the ball goes around and Clay or Steph is wide open. It's like rule number one, never leave them open.
Ever.
Like if Iggy is hitting like clutch threes, that's the way you got to go down.
Live with that.
You cannot go down like that. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm glad it went to 6. I think this series is fascinating in all sorts of ways.
Yeah, it's getting that way.
If Cleveland wins 6, at what point do you think it'll take? Where do you think we have to get before the press starts openly questioning the Warriors in any way?
Next year.
They got real comfortable seats on that bandwagon.
Yeah, next year.
Like, they bought Lazy Boys for that bandwagon. Yeah, they've got their feet up. They've got a beer.
Because they're just now beginning to critique the Thunder. They just got off that bandwagon maybe a year ago.
Right.
Kevin Durant was the media darling. Kevin Durant pretty much had to flip them off to get them to change the narrative on them.
Right. So now it's, you know, they love Steph. I get it. He's a transcendent talent. I totally understand. But relax.
He's got Draymond Green on his team. He's got Draymond Green on his team. And I think Draymond, that game's closer. For the people who are saying that if Draymond was in, like, Golden State would have won, that's not true. Now, granted, he would have hit some of those threes that Harrison Barnes missed, but...
Well, defense would have been different, too. I mean, it would have been a different game.
I think LeBron was just a different person last night.
I think he wasn't going to go out like that.
He wasn't going to go out like that.
I got to say, though, I mean, with Draymond not out there, if Kevin Love is still only getting 2 points, like, they got to figure something out because...
They got to bring him off the bench again.
Yeah.
At least.
Bring him off the bench. I mean, what I don't understand, like, you know, if you're going to have Kyrie and LeBron play all those minutes, when they need to get rest, have Love be the guy that they go, you know, even if you've got the bench guys throwing down to him down low, that sounds like an offense. You know what I mean? Like, you can figure something out. Like, have these little spurts where he's the star of the show. You know what I mean? All right. Anything else you want to say about the NBA?
Nope.
Okay. We're going to end with a somber note. We should probably talk about what happened in Orlando.
Probably should.
The biggest, I guess the word I want to use is massacre on U.S. soil since 9/11. As we record this, which is about 8:20 Eastern on Tuesday night, as we record this, it's not entirely clear why this guy did this yet. You know, there's the thing where he called and claimed allegiance to ISIS, but I mean, there's really not like proof that he was like some. First of all, like, it's not like there's like an application process for being in ISIS. You know what I mean? He was clearly influenced by the propaganda. But one thing that I think is really kind of interesting is we're now starting to hear that. This wasn't just like he showed up one day randomly to this place. He had profiles on gay dating sites and apps. He was at that club multiple times.
How do they know he was at the club multiple times?
Because people who survived had seen him there multiple times. They recalled him being there.
Okay. They take attendance at that club or something?
You know, some places have regulars. And he was there. Absolutely. And he was there enough that people knew who he was.
Yeah. So he didn't. He didn't draw any curious.
Right. Homeless. Right. Right. So we're getting a complicated picture of who this guy is, and we don't know 100% yet. There's so many layers to this, but
so many.
The biggest thing to me, and I'm just gonna get on my soapbox for like 2 minutes.
Go ahead.
I don't think this is. I mean, this isn't that complicated in one sense. Like, we have to get rid of guns. We have to. I know it won't start that way. I know that people are going to continue to argue for what they call common sense restrictions, things like assault rifles, you know, maybe stopping people on the terrorist watch list from buying guns, stuff like that. And, you know, I'm sure that if anything happens, it'll be in that direction. But long term, I just don't understand why we have this perverted idea about what the Second Amendment was intended for. It was not meant so that you could, you know, get all hopped up on thinking that you're some special forces commando so that you can go get this big old gun. So what, you can hunt a deer like with something that looks like you could be like parachuting into wherever the U.S. government's going next. Like, come on. We fetishize guns in this country. We fetishize military in this country. And America's a violent nation, a violent culture. And you cannot have a violent culture along with the access to guns that we have and not expect there to be issues. I just don't get it. I don't understand why I'm not, I don't hear more of this. Like, I'm an unabashed liberal. What I hear from most people who are on my side of the spectrum is, you know, well, let's try to get what we can get, you know, like, let's try to get some common sense restrictions. And it's like, have any of you ever negotiated anything? Like, if you want to start at the compromise and think you're going to get it, like, that's not how this works. Like, you have to ask for what you want and what you believe in, because that's what conservatives have done for the past 40 years. we've, you know, it, the Republican platform in the early 70s called for a ban on handguns. It called for gun registration. The NRA used to be about hunting, right? They changed that over time. So, like, if you believe that guns are a problem, we have to advocate for it. I think you have to start there. I think anything else is all, like, it's all noise. Because we've seen it happen where, whether it's Dylan, that kid Dylan Roof in Charleston who shot up a church, whether it's the guy in the theater in Colorado, whether it's this guy in the nightclub in Orlando. Like, ideology might play a role, but, you know, we got crazy people of all creeds, colors, who have access to unbelievable weapons. I just don't understand it.
That was it? That was your rant?
That was it.
I thought you were going to go like super in. That was light. And I don't say that in a light way, like, oh, that was whack. I thought you were going to.
I mean, I've said it before on the show, and it's like depressing at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm becoming very jaded to the narrative.
The craziest, like, a lot of the reaction has been predictable.
It's like, totally.
The crazy thing that we have stirring in the element now is Donald Trump.
Why? Listen, here's my question.
Yeah.
As for you, somebody who got your degree in political science, you are a politic nerd.
Yeah.
Why are people paying attention to Donald Trump when this is clearly what he wants? Don't feed the trolls, right? And he sort of like trolled his way into a Republican nomination. Because when nothing else was going on, there was nothing. Now, this is a casual viewpoint, so I could be
sure,
wrong.
Sure,
but
sure.
My casual viewpoint of the Republican nomination was nothing else was going on. None of the other candidates were making any sort of noise that was entertaining, intriguing, interesting, any of that. And now you've got Donald Trump, who already is a, whether right, wrong, or indignant, a very fascinating, polarizing character just because of his history in our culture. He's like, I'm going to run for president. I'm going to say all these crazy things. And because nothing else was going on, we decided to pay attention to that. It picks up steam. And here we are 6 months later, 8 months later, and he has the Republican nomination.
I think it's a little bit, I don't know if it's quite that nothing was going on. I think a lot of things. I think if you're a conservative and you're not too young, then basically your party, if you're a certain kind of conservative, your party has spent the last 40 years promising you that if you cut taxes on the wealthy, and if you, you know, believe that that will improve your economic well-being, because these people are the ones who are out there running companies, and when you cut their taxes, they're going to invest more in their companies, and there's going to be more jobs to be created, right? They've sort of sold people on that, and then there's also been a huge amount of attention that instead gets played to social issues, and this works on both sides of the spectrum, right? Like, for a long time, up until recently, like, the difference economically between, you know, like, I mean, yeah, there's differences, but like, it was always about social issues, right? Let's divide the country on social issues, but like, economically, there's a chunk of this country, and it's a chunk that really likes to vote Republican. But there's actually just a lot of people who, I mean, they're doing okay. But yeah, specifically white blue collar workers with high school level education. You used to, 40 years ago, you could come out of high school and you could get a job, and you could have that job for a while, and you could raise a family on that job. That world does not exist anymore. And Donald Trump has a narrative to explain to people why that is. And it's because these other countries have changed America, and they're taking your jobs, and your jobs are going overseas, and he's going to build his wall, and he's going to change trade, and everything's going to be great again. And it's so simplistic, and it's not at all how the world works, but at least he has a message for these people.
Mm.
There's a lot of politicians who don't have a message for these people. Like, yeah, it, you know, we have this problem in Connecticut right now. Trump is going to do well in Connecticut. He won the primary here. Now, there's a lot of liberals here too. But, you know, we used to have a bunch of factories. There's not that many anymore. Connecticut's a union state, right? A lot, not as heavily union as it used to be, but certainly more union than, say, down south, you know, is more of a union state. So companies go elsewhere. And is there an answer? Like, so what do you do? How you know, what do you do? Like, it's a place that is more expensive than living down south, but you know, the jobs aren't there like they used to be. So, you know, there's been a recovery since the Great Recession, since 2008, 2009, but it's a recovery in the sense of, yeah, jobs are coming back, but for a lot of people, it's not the same jobs. Like, people talk, like, politicians always talk about, like, you know, oh, well, the economy did this and jobs did this and unemployment rate did this. Like, yes, having a job is crucial. It's what kind of job do you have? And there's a portion of this country that basically they look around, they look at the demographics changing, they look at the way that jobs work changing, they look at how education now changes. And if you didn't get that education when you were younger, what are you going to do now? And they say, this is not the America I knew, and they're terrified. And nobody wants to scare them more than Donald Trump, because he knows he can scare them into voting for him, because he is a fake strongman who is clearly just putting on a front. It's classic, like, sort of bully, like, I'm just going to act like a strong guy. You know, he's probably incredibly thin skinned and isn't by any stretch of the imagination what you would consider a strong human being. But that's the image he puts up, and people buy into it because, number one, he's a celebrity, and we're a culture that idolizes celebrities. Number two, he's wealthy, or at least says he's wealthy, and we idolize people who are wealthy. And the emergence of social media means that we can't rely on the media as an institution to screen this stuff out anymore. He has a direct pipeline to anybody who wants to hear him, and he's discovered how you get the media to pay. He's discovered the media's worst thing, which is all the media cares about right now is they've stopped caring about what they should cover, and they care about what can get them traffic, what can get them clicks, what can get them views. And Donald Trump is custom made for that. We have arrived at this point in American history. In some ways on purpose, it was planned that way. In some ways, it's just accidental. Donald Trump is the candidate who he's like, you know, a lock has been created, and he just happens to kind of fit in for a portion of the population. He is just a unique key. Wouldn't have worked 20 years ago. Might not work 5 years from now, but right now it's working. It's complicated. You know, like, look, I'm a liberal. I thought Bernie was, I really like Bernie on economics. I didn't love all of his stuff, but I thought that at the very least, he understood that people who aren't doing very well don't want to just hear that we can make incremental progress. Like, they want to hear another story. I think Hillary is an incredibly more qualified candidate than Trump. But I also know that when people hear the name Hillary Clinton, that they just think it's the same old, same old. And the same old is not paying their bills. It hasn't helped them out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think part of it, honestly, a lot of it is perception. Perception is reality. And the reality used to be that if you were a parent, you could look at your kids and you could go, they're going to do better than I did, because we had room to grow. We are as standard of living has increased and increased and increased, you get to a point where all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, I don't know if my kids are going to do better. And that's a really frightening thought for people. And it's difficult to really distill down why, like, there's all sorts of complicated reasons why that is, right? And I should point out, this is what I'm saying. That's a very, frankly, white, like, centric view. Do you know what I mean? Like, people talk about, oh, the middle class used to do this, the middle class used to do that. Yeah, because it didn't allow people of color to participate. You know, it's a lot easier to have, you know, it's a lot easier to have an economy where white people can stumble into any old job and make it work if you have racist policies, both official and implied, that's make it so that nobody who that if you're not white, then you don't have a chance at all. Like, we as you even the playing as you even though it's not totally even, as you try to make the playing field more even, there are going to be winners and losers. It's capitalism. But people don't want to hear that. They want to hear the story. They want to hear Trump tell them why. I'm essentially, he's basically getting up there and saying the Mexicans are taking your jobs, even though what's really happening is rich companies are incentivized to ship jobs to Mexico and other places around the world so that they can increase their stock price, because we've made rules so that if you get you know, if you make money off of stocks, you don't pay a certain tax rate like you do in your regular money, et cetera. So there's all these weird incentives that make it so that countries want to do that. But people don't know and care about that. They just want the guy who's going to sit up there and bluster and act tough because they think that's the world. It's depressing.
Yeah, I'm depressed now. Just listening to you explain all this.
Does that make sense? I've sort of rambled, but like...
Yeah, it does. It's just... I think my primary concern in all this, and this is really the only thing I have to say about Orlando, is one of my best friends lives in Orlando. My son lives like an hour and a half. I'm actually going to Orlando this weekend. Mm. And I hit up my best friend to see if he was all right. He's like, I'm good. He was like, but my mom was going to go to that club that night. And at the last minute, she decided not to go. And in all of this stuff, because I think in some instances, agenda is like a dirty word to a lot of people, but everybody has an agenda with what they say. Like, you want to steer somebody to something. But in all of this, 50 people lost their lives. 53 people are hurt to various degrees. And that's not the primary conversation. The primary conversation is gun control, which is important. The primary conversation is, well, what was this man's, you know, what was his religious beliefs? What was, you know, like it, all that stuff. And that's what you were talking about earlier when you were saying the narrative is the same, because now it's all these things that I'm hearing that I've heard before with every major massacre, as you referred to it earlier, happens. There's always some radical terrorist group, some often Muslim. Is always some sort of troubled past. There's always, it's just like, there's always one person, there's a heroic story, somebody pulled somebody underneath a car and say, and it's like, all that's well and good, but it's just the entire narrative as a whole is very exhausting, very dragging. I'm just tired of it. At the end of the day, over 100 people's lives were impacted, or they're not here anymore. Right. And that's not the primary conversation. You know what I'm saying? We can have all these other conversations, but at the end of the day, people's lives have changed forever. Families, people have lost fathers, sons, mothers, daughters, sisters, wives, like all that stuff. And that's not the primary conversation. And that concerns me more than anything. It grieves me that that's not as much, if not the primary concern of the conversation. So like that's where my heart lies. That's where my focus is. It's just like, man, I'm glad that, you know, the godfather to my son, his mother almost was in that situation. So all this other stuff right now, yes, needs to be addressed, but right now it doesn't matter.
I think it's always been that way.
It has. Okay. It totally
has.
That's
not new.
It's not new. And so that's what my problem is, Doc. It's just like, this is repetitive. Like, when are things going to change? And then my fear is that things change, and the change that happens isn't the change that we think we are going to get, or we think we want, or we think there's so many different variables in it that it's just like, what do you do? So I don't know, man.
You start by getting rid of guns.
My only question for gun control is, who controls the people?
What do you mean?
Like, so if we take guns away,
yeah.
I mean, if you want something bad enough, you're going to be able to get it. So, and I'm not saying to not get rid of guns, but what I am saying is like, I'm under the belief that guns don't kill people. People do.
Sure.
So what are we going to do about the people?
Grenades don't kill people. People do, but like, we don't really like let people go out and buy grenades. We don't let people go out and buy nuclear weapons.
You can still, I mean, you can't get nuclear weapons, but you can get grenades.
You can, but they're illegal, and we've decided that that's okay. You can't go buy a tank or a stealth fighter, even if you had the money. Wouldn't be allowed. So we've decided that there's a limit to the ways that people can kill other people.
Right.
It's just a matter of where is that limit, and I don't understand why a semi-automatic rifle isn't. It is. What are you going to defend yourself with that?
Yeah.
You can go hunt a deer with that? Come on, bro.
It was an AR-15, right?
Yeah, it was AR-15.
And like, what do you do? So, okay. So here's another question that I have, Doc. So also the night before, was it the night before where the girl from The Voice got killed too?
Yeah.
And then does this also tie into what happened with Troy Ave?
How so?
Guns got in the building.
Sure.
Guns were used.
Sure.
People got killed.
Right. Here's how I sort. I'm trying to think of a good way to put this, but it's like, all right. Let me ask you this. All right. So if let's say we enacted gun control, I think that whatever, and you can define that however you want, but let's just say in some way the amount of guns that were legally allowed to be owned was reduced.
Mm-hmm.
How would you judge if that were a success? I don't think you would judge it. Like, so in other words, or maybe more accurately, how would you judge it if it were a failure? Like, is it going to stop every murder from ever happening? No, because things can still happen.
Right.
But it can help a lot. Like, people are still going to kill people. I don't know why we have to make it so easy to do so. Like, knives have other uses. What use does a gun have aside from killing something? Like, seriously.
I mean, it's people are going to say protection.
Right. And I think that's part of the American problem that we have. It's this American macho myth that we have. You know, and people will tell you, well, you know, it's a free country and I have the right to defend myself. And it's like, yeah, you're defending yourself from people with guns. It's a circular thing. Like the more that you allow guns to have, the more that will be manufactured, the more that will be floating around. Like, I guess, I think it depends on how you define success, right? It's like the inverse of this is like the war on drugs. Like, if you believe that drugs are terrible, then you would judge success in the war on drugs by a reduction in usage of drugs. You wouldn't look at it and go, oh, two people found marijuana. We failed. That's not what the war on drugs failed for other reasons. That's not why it failed. Do you know what I mean, though? But like, if you were to sit there and talk about gun control, the first time that somebody shoots somebody with a gun, it really should make people say, wow, yeah, we really got to get rid of those. Do you know what I mean? But instead, I think you would hear an argument of, oh, boy, gun control didn't work.
Yeah.
I just don't get that.
I don't know, man. I think that gun control is the first step. You know what I'm saying? Because now then we have to take a look at things like mental health.
Sure. People have been mentally unstable for as long as people have existed.
Exactly. Since creation began. So my one thing that I'm learning this later in life is that mental health is just as important as physical health.
Sure.
So you've got people who will go to the gym but will not go to a therapist.
Right.
And if life hits us the way that life has hit us all, then there's just some things that we can't figure out that we need some help trying to understand, to process. I don't know when we decide that we wake up one day and we decide, you know what, I can handle this. There's just things that happen to us that we just can't handle or understand or comprehend or walk through. And for many people, a good chunk of people, we all have experienced traumatic things that shape the way that we think, the way that we perceive the world, perceive ourselves, and all of that. And so if we get rid of guns, but we got a bunch of crazy people running around, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not going to argue with you to say that we need to figure out what the heck we're going to do with guns, but I also want to figure out what the heck we're going to do with each other. That's important too.
Sure. And again, it's not like we get rid of guns and, you know, we're going to be walking around every day like the opening 30 seconds to Father Stretch My Hands.
But I feel like people think that that's the answer and it's merely part of the solution.
Right. But that's no reason to not start working on the answer.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Right. I think you and I are saying the same thing. I'm speaking more to our audience or to the people there that their primary focus has been gun control. Because then once we control guns, then what? We need another step after that.
Mental health is harder, frankly.
Absolutely.
Like the will to do gun control is difficult.
Yeah.
As a country.
Yep.
The execution of it, while it might take a lot of money, conceptually, there are ways to do that. I would be super aggressive. I would go down the Australia route with like buybacks of guns and like really, like, ratchet it down. Because when we did, like, an assault rifle ban in the 90s, there was all sorts of loopholes. Like, if you owned an older one, it was fine. You just couldn't buy a new one. All sorts. It was classic compromise legislation that kind of said, like, it did something and offered something for both sides, which meant it really didn't offer anything. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
No, like, if you really mean it, then you really mean it. Like, you know, you get rid of it. Like, it's, you know, it would be like if we decided, you know, we got to ban cars that use gasoline,
right?
Because we can't afford, you know, we're killing the earth. I'm not saying we should do that. Let's say you decided that, but you know, we're gonna exempt any car made before 2016. Right. You're like, all right, so what are you really fixing? Do you know how long it's gonna take? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And there were so many loopholes, and with guns, like people who are I will call charitably gun enthusiasts. They'll be like, oh, what's an assault rifle? Is it when I put a scope on it? Because da-da-da-da. And it's like, all right. That, which is why, for me, it's like, no. The answer is we just don't need guns. Like, period. Unless we're talking like a basic rifle that you want to go hunting with. I'm talking a basic rifle. Not something where, like, anything is semi-automatic, anything with scopes and sights and crazy stuff like that. Like, I get it. We're America. We think we should have freedom to do this stuff. But we've proven as a society that we can't handle this.
Yeah.
We just have. And even all I hear is, well, responsible gun owners, everybody thinks they're a responsible gun owner. Do you think people who are not responsible gun owners describe themselves? How would you, like, so if people want to go down that route of, well, I'm a responsible gun owner, why are you punishing me? Great. So are you, let me ask you this, would you be okay if we said, well, great, I want to, how do I know who the responsible gun owner is? So we're going to have classes and you're going to have to get a license. Like, it's easier to get a gun than it is to get a car.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's easier to get a gun than it is to turn in a gun to the police.
Right. Right.
Like, if you're really serious about deciding who is a good gun owner, like, imagine if you could just go buy a car and then we had a bunch of people driving and crashing.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, you can't make me get a license. Come on. I'm a responsible car driver.
Right.
Come on. At the very least, we eliminate, frankly, I think we should eliminate handguns too. Like, people with semi-automatic rifles, they can make the argument that, you know, they want to go Rambo on a deer. Like, all right, fine, whatever. You're not going out there shoot a Bambi with a handgun. Like, you buy a handgun, it's because you hope that you never have hope. You that might be used on a person. You know what I mean? Like, the idea of a handgun ban used to be something that America kind of agreed on until the mid 70s. Like, a handgun ban, semi-automatic rifle ban. Anything that makes a rifle an assault rifle. And I would be super aggressive on that too. Sorry, people. And then everybody else, let's get them licensed. Let's figure out what you've got. You know, we can't. It's people are just so crazy about this.
Yeah.
So if you're a responsible gun owner, then please speak up and say, yeah, sure, I'm responsible. I'll let you know that I have a gun so that we can know how many guns there are. We can make sure that people actually know how to shoot. It would be like if we just eliminated driver's licenses one day. Yeah.
No.
Right. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. All right, man. Anything else you want to say about anything?
Nah. I think, excuse me. I think we're good. I think we talked plenty.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us on Clock Ready Speakers this week. You might have opinions or feedback about what we said. In the show, use the hashtag #ClockReadySpeakers or hit us up on Twitter. Follow us both on Twitter. Follow the show on Twitter at CRS Podcast. And please, if you don't mind, rate and review us on iTunes. Although after this episode, maybe I shouldn't ask people to rate and review us on iTunes, but we'll see.
I think we were light. We've had some heavy episodes. I think this was pretty light.
I think we're pretty good. Hopefully.
Yeah, I think this is pretty light. Probably no show next week.
No show next week. You're traveling.
I'll be out in these streets.
Out in these streets. Hopefully we might have something to talk about in 2 weeks.
Yeah, hopefully.
One thing we should close with, because I can't wait to see your reaction. So, Schoolboy Q, did you see his album cover?
Yeah, I did see it. Oh, what were you going
to
say?
I was going to say, for people who haven't heard it, could you describe to them what his album cover is?
It's basically the Jordan crying meme with the face, like, melted.
Right. It's called Blank Face LP.
I haven't heard the Kanye West record. Is that any good? I haven't heard any singles off this album yet.
It was okay. It was okay. Does the original photographer of this get any
bruh?
Like, I would be a hot meme, you know. All right, it's hard to control that, but like an album cover that people are selling, I wonder, if, I wonder if he's not licensing that photo, I wonder if he'll get sued anyway. What were you going to say? Last thing?
Shouldn't Jordan get that? Well, I guess not if it's
I mean, it's a photo of him.
It's his likeness. So, I mean, right. it's kind of like the Jordan silhouette, right?
Well, that's that's a trademarked like sort of silhouette, but like
Well, if Jordan was smart, he would have locked that meme up.
Yeah. That's tough to do. It's more like the rights of the photographer, actually.
Gotcha.
But yeah, all right. No show next week. We'll catch y'all in two weeks.
Yeah, no show next week. I heard Father Stretch My Hands on the radio today.
Yeah, did you now?
I did. So when they announced the tour dates, the 5 o'clock traffic jam mix or whatever was all Kanye music.
Mm.
And they played it. And I caught it. I recorded it. And do you want to hear it on the show?
I'd love to hear it real quick.
All right, hold on. We'll get out of here on this note. All right, let me make sure I got it.
I mean, that's about what I expected.
I wanted him to rewrite that so bad.
No,
say this though. I am glad that it's a real edit and not like. Some of these radio edits be cheating. They'll blur. they'll erase half of the word so you still know what they're saying.
Yeah, I used to do those edits.
Yeah, and what they tell you, like, well, okay, so instead of the B word, just make sure that you can hear itch.
Right. So you just reverse little part, like you get to a point where you're like reversing like syllables.
Yeah. I don't like that because then you know my daughter's in the car, like she can, you know, she's not stupid. She can pick up on that stuff. She knows cuss words off.
How are you going to feel when the entire audience at every Kanye show sings along to that?
That's one of the reasons why I want to go to the concert very low and incognito, because I just want to be a voyeur at the show. I just want to look. I want to hear those records in a big stadium, as I said a few weeks ago.
Yeah, famous. Famous.
Yeah, I got to hear famous in a big. I got to hear famous and Father Stretch My Hands. And even, I always forget the name of that other record. I don't know the
Ultra Light Beam?
Nah. I still haven't listened to that song since we did the review.
I think Waves will sound good live, too, actually.
Waves will sound good live. I just want to finish.
Oh, Fade.
Oh, yeah. I'm not being a voyeur to Fade. I'm ignorantly dancing to Fade. What's the record? Heard About the Good News? What's that record?
Oh, that one?
Yeah, I want to hear that live.
Mm.
Because whenever I hear it in my head, believe it or not, I hear the Yeezy Season 3 version.
Which was real, yeah.
It sounded dope.
Yeah.
So that's what I want to hear. Part of me, like every time I think about that show, it just makes me mad I didn't go to the movie theater thing. Mm-hmm. I felt like that would have been dope, and you know, you were on it, you just couldn't make it. But I was like, nah, I'm not paying $20 for that. So I went. Hold on. Side note: I'm sure we don't have any listeners who did, but if you had any listeners who bought the ticket and bought the pre-order, have you gotten your physical copies of The Life of Pablo yet?
Mm.
Or your merch? I've only seen the merch on Instagram, people wearing it, but I haven't seen a physical copy of The Life of Pablo anywhere.
Interesting.
So if you have it, hit us up at CRS Podcast.
You see that Kanye went and tweaked Watch the Throne?
What? I was just, oh my God. I was listening to Watch the Throne the other day. Tidal had a really good, like, deep cuts.
Yeah, Kanye, so go on Tidal, and it actually shows, there's multiple versions of Watch the Throne. On Apple Music, I think there's just the one new one.
Yeah.
But, like, some stuff is, there's a couple, like, minor tweaks. Like, okay. What's the song? Oh, I can't even think of the name of it. Doesn't have, like, one of the songs had, like, a 3-minute silence in front of it. Remember that?
Is that Illest MF Alive?
Yeah. That's gone. They cut that out, thankfully.
Oh, they cut the 3 minutes of silence out?
Yeah, which is good.
Yes, that's
it. It appears that they slightly tweaked the auto-tune on the sample on New Day. And there's one part of That's My B where they, it went a cappella for a bit, and I think they changed that. So, like, they made, like, weird. I'm like, why are you
tweaking Watch the Throne? Yo. The beat switch.
Nothing is safe.
Nothing is safe. Yeah, Kanye's like, oh, I can change it, put it out now?
Right.
Like, Kanye's all over the place. I'm going to say this, then we can get out of here.
Yeah.
The beat switch on Murder to Excellence.
The first part is better.
No.
Yeah.
No. The first part is great. Don't get me wrong. The song, it's the entire song itself, I forgot about the beat switch. It was, my daughter and I were cleaning up the house listening to it. And we're getting ready to take the trash out. We had a bunch of trash.
Yeah.
So we're getting ready to go outside. The music is still playing and the beat switch happens. I make us stay in the house and listen. I said, no, don't go outside. Hold on. I said, the ugly screw face.
That Beyonce record aside, the production on Watch the Throne is pretty incredible, actually.
It's held up well. I think that's one of those albums that the narrative changes as time goes on because it sounds better later. It's one of those things where, like, you don't realize what was going on. It's things that you have to do to get to a certain place.
Cruel Summer, people might look at that. Like, go back and listen to Mercy. Like, when Mercy came out in 2012, that song could come out right now.
Yeah, it could. It could. I agree with that.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think that's it for this week.
Yeah, let's get out of here.
All right. Talk to you guys later.